Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Thrive in EDU podcast. I am Rochelle Denae Poth. This is season four, episode number 19, at least I think. So just in case it's not, we're going to go with that. If you are just joining in for the first time, thank you. And if you have been listening for a while, bonus points if you've actually been listening since I started my podcast all of those years ago. But I thank you for joining in today. And I do want to invite you to join the Thrive in EDU community on Facebook. It's full of educators from around the world. We share lots of different resources. We have some fun, post some questions, and just have another space to connect. There's no shortage of spaces out there, but it's nice to have a group that you can go to and you can share the work that you're doing, the struggles maybe that you're experiencing, get some new ideas, and all of those things. So the importance of having your PLN is something I wish I knew many, many years ago. So in the last couple of my episodes here, I've talked about some different ideas. I've shared about reflection. I've also talked about reviewing and reteaching strategies, kicking off the new year with some unconventional ideas, which unconventional is the title of one of my books, Unconventional Ways to Thrive in EDU, and just different topics that come to mind. And for probably the last 4.5 to 5 years now, one of the biggest topics, there are two that are really big topics for me, one of which is SEL, and then the other one is artificial intelligence. And my interest in AI has continued to grow ever since first writing a blog post for Getting Smart as part of like their themes for the month. I think it was January of that year. And I was amazed. And so I decided to dive into teaching it with my students, learning from my students. I took the course through ISTE. And from that point on, I've just continued to absorb as much information about it as I can. And so it's amazing how many changes have happened when it comes to AI in the world in general, the increase in interest, not just in education, but in all sectors of work. And I just can't keep up. And I know that's something that we often say as educators, like, how do we keep up with all the things? And it's just by connecting, reading, listening to podcasts, going to conferences, whatever it is, even Twitter chats, a lot of them are on topics like AI and the ChatGPT right now. And so today's episode is kind of a follow-up of a prior episode where I did talk about AI and ChatGPT. And I think a big concern is, number one, like about plagiarism and students using it to complete assignments. But I think that we have to go beyond just in our role as educators and what may or may not happen in our own classrooms when it comes to the use of ChatGPT or others like it, for students to use it to generate an essay, to write a poem, for whatever it is that they might use ChatGPT if they have the access to it for. And ever since it became open to the public back in November, the number of people that are trying it out, and even the number of people that are just starting to learn about it, it's just on the rise. And for everybody, you know, there's some level of concern, and it may range from, well, what kind of an assignment or writing prompt can I give my students so they can't just crank it into ChatGPT and turn it back to me? It pushes us to think differently, to actually use it and put your prompts in, put the types of things that you're asking your students to do into ChatGPT and see what it generates. But on the flip side of that, still speaking about education, there are so many different ways that people are using it that it is streamlining a lot of tedious tasks that you may have. And that varies for everybody. I know that some educators have used it to create lesson plans, to write some different standards they've used. They've used it to generate ideas for writing prompts, for example. They've used it to create practice kind of example writing assessments for students to kind of look at and break it apart and analyze it, which is good because you want students to be able to evaluate sources and develop that media literacy, that digital literacy that is so important. And so there are tons of possibilities. And so I think the big thing is we have to make sure that we understand what the technology is, what the possibilities of it are, what are the benefits, what are the drawbacks, what are the concerns, And the list can go on and on. And so I guess I should back up, because if you didn't hear my earlier episode back in December, I had one about what ChatGPT is. And so basically, it is a chatbot that has been built, and it's an upgrade from GPT-3, which back in 2020, I helped with research for an article for Forbes, and then it was posted on Getting Smart with Tom Vander Ark, who is a CEO and does lots of amazing work, travels around the country, goes into schools, sends me some very interesting topics to write about, which is just, I'm so happy to get those. But we wrote about GPT-3. And so GPT is generative pre-trained transformer text, and it's a trained language model that uses deep learning and can simulate human conversation. And so, like I said, that was back in 2020, probably in the summer. And so now here we are 2.5 years later, but about a little over two years to when now ChatGPT became available and was released by OpenAI. And so it is artificial intelligence, and it can respond to whatever the prompts are that you give, and it can engage you in all kinds of activities of creating things, and it feels like a human conversation. So it will respond to the prompts. It uses natural language processing, which is what chatbots use. Whenever we have voice assistants, those types of things, that enables the technology, the AI, to understand questions, prompts, conversations from humans, and to be able to generate a response that mimics human conversation. It can understand context. It improves over time. It can answer like right away within seconds. And it, I don't know that I've tried a prompt with it that it has not been able to generate something. However, the limitations are that the data that it has been trained with as of now, as of this date of recording, is up through the end of 2021. So you may not get an answer to something that was from, say, 2022, but it was released back on November 30th. And I think within a week, roughly, there were over 1 million users that were trying to explore what it does, which of course led to a slowdown of the system. But no worries, because you could be entertained, because they would generate a top 10 list of why ChatGPT is not available, or something to that effect. Or you could even have it send you an email that said that it was available. But honestly, the number of times that that happened to me, I just waited, I refreshed, I tried it again, and within a couple of minutes, it was ready to go. I did spend a few hours on that first Saturday night in December trying it out, thinking of anything like 10 ideas for a party, and then giving it different variables. Like, what if people have allergies? What if the weather is bad? What if people don't want to interact too much, or people don't like playing games? Like, everything that it gave me, I gave it some other variable, and it generated new ideas, and it just kept remembering and working through that. I will say that as a language teacher, it is also something that can be concerning, but then again, language educators that are out there, you know that there are translators online, Google Translate, and all kinds of technologies that anybody can input into one language and have it instantly translated into another. Is it always correct? No, because it doesn't understand human context, and we can process that type of information way better. Prime example I always use is if I say I want a bat, and I might have even said this in my last episode, I want a bat. Okay. People would assume probably that I want a bat because maybe I want to play baseball, softball, but maybe I actually want like the animal type of a bat. A human would probably sort through that and figure, well, she probably doesn't want that. She wants the actual sports, but you don't know. And so that's the drawback, is understanding the human part of it, the human conversation. One other concern is looking at the privacy policy, because if you take a close look at it and you read through it, you might be a little bit shocked. So I will recommend that you always, with all technologies and digital tools, you look at the guidelines. You look at the safety and security that they have in place. Are they in compliance with whatever it is that they need to be in compliance with, depending on where you are located and your school system? But what makes ChatGPT different, if you're wondering, like, well, what about Google? Is that Google, you can look up project-based learning, and you will get millions, billions of results in less than a second, photos, videos, news, you name it, and you have to sort through it. You still have to click, you still have to find information, process that information. not quite as long in terms of time as, say, the Dewey Decimal System, but you still have to process it and sort it and filter it and find more relevant, recent, definitely reliable resources. But when it comes to ChatGPT, it streamlines that process because it just gives you all of the information that's been programmed with. So you can type in what is project-based learning, and it will give you definitions. If you ask it to expand on PBL, give examples, give ideas for how to use it in a grade level, in a certain content area, it can do that. And it helps people, like the more that you interact with it, it helps the designers to evaluate it, to generate more reliable responses, and they'll continue to improve it because guess what? ChatGPT 4 is coming out by the summer of this year. And so if you haven't had a chance to check it out, I would say go dive in, ask it some different prompts, ask it, what is photosynthesis? Ask it to create a recipe, ask it to write a script for something. I put in some different things like a character's name, a color, a place, and asked it to write something in Spanish. And within seconds, it generated however many words that I wanted. And then I could change the variables. But the key is understanding the technology. What are the benefits? Trying it out, assuming with the students, you know, having the conversation. Outright banning of it, like some school districts and some states or cities have done, I will not make a comment on that. I just think that with all technology that we've come across over time, we have to seek to understand it, and it might make things easier. But at the end of the day, we still have to be able to sort through information, to problem solve, to think creatively, to be critical thinkers, and to know how to use information. Because if the technology disappears, we are still going to need to have the skills to create, to work, to do our tasks, to do whatever it is that we need to. So a couple last things. Check out the ChatGPT. You might want to check out CuraPod, which is new and awesome, and it can generate slides and a presentation for you within seconds on any topic that also has some interactivity with polls. Then you can also check out some other things like GPT-0 or some of those plagiarism checkers that can tell whether or not something has been written by AI. So at the end of the day, don't be afraid to explore some of these tools because we have to understand them so that we can help students to understand them, to prepare them for the future and how these technologies may become a big part of their future. But final reminder, check the privacy and the policies of all the tools that you're using in your classroom. And if you've tried it and have some fun prompt to share, I would love to hear that from you. Please connect with me on Twitter, RDENE915, join the Thriving EDU Facebook community, and thanks for listening, and I will catch you the next time. I'll be sure to drop some resources here with the show notes.